I am a member of the section, and I wanted to note that Andrea Gielen, who's the PI on this work that I'll be presenting, is also a member of our section, a former president or chair of the section, I should say, and is also tomorrow evening receiving the APHA's President's Award, which is basically like our Lifetime Achievement Award. So to reiterate Roberta's comment about joining PHEHP, we're also, in addition to being number one, we're also winners of major awards. So I'm here to talk about the health belief model and its application to a home safety intervention in an urban community. Much to the dismay of my family, my husband, my friends, I have no relationships to disclose of a financial nature. And specifically what I'd like to do is describe how the health belief model guided safety assessment and targeted messaging as part of this larger community intervention trial on home safety behaviors, and then share with you the evaluation or show how that what the impact of the health belief model constructs had on the assessment and messaging of participants' home safety knowledge. And I imagine many of you are thinking, okay, so what's an old tired dog like this doing in a session entitled Emerging Theories? And by old tired dog, I mean health belief model, not me. So first of all, I didn't name this session. I recognize that the health belief model is not an emerging theory in our field, but I did want to share that in my area of work as a health educator who does most of my work around injury prevention, it's important to note that theory has not been really well utilized in developing injury prevention. So we know that programs based on theory are more likely to succeed, and we all recognize that the health belief model is one of the most widely used and studied behavioral theories in our field. But what I'm here to do is share the utility of its application in the area that I invest most of my time, which is injury prevention. So I'm here to do that through a larger community intervention trial called the Johns Hopkins Home Safety Project. And the overall aim of this work that was based in Baltimore was to enhance our local fire department's long-standing home visiting program with the ultimate goal of creating safer homes and safer residents. This multi-phase trial has been in the works since 2009. In the first phase, we did a variety of formative work, including creating our study communities using census tract data. In phase two, we completed a household survey, mostly to establish comparability between our standard and enhanced communities. Phase three is where the home visit intervention takes place. Phase four, which was done 6 to 9 months after the home visit implementation, was a second household survey, which we will use for evaluation data. And then we're currently still in the midst of evaluating or analyzing a significant amount of data, but also sharing our results, not only with leaders in our community, but also in the National Fire Prevention Community as well. I'm not going to go through the health belief model. My sense is that the audience is very well schooled in that, but I just want to show you how we use some of its constructs. So from our first household survey, we had some of our assessment measures be guided by constructs from the health belief model. So here you see that 13% of household survey one participants described as very likely that there would be a fire in their neighborhood. 39% of our participants described house fires as a very serious problem. 60% identified that smoke alarms save lives, et cetera. And the way we use this information from this and other information collected from our Household Survey 1 data was to guide the development of enhancements that were made to the fire department's existing home program. So in our standard community, the fire department continued with their long-standing home visiting program where they go unannounced into the neighborhood, knocking on doors. Those doors that are answered, the fire department offers to come in, install smoke alarms in the home, conduct fire safety education at no charge to the family. The enhancements that we made to that program included a community health worker who would go out in advance of the fire department, one to two days in advance of the area where the fire department was going to be. Again, knock on doors, but importantly, to let the community members know that the fire department was coming. They also were trained in using a script that drew from constructs of the health belief model, particularly targeting issues related to susceptibility, so informing people about the likelihood of fires in the area, and then really honing in on the benefits of smoke alarms. A relatively new type of smoke alarm was adopted by the fire department's home visiting program, and the features of that smoke alarm included, most importantly, that it's powered by a 10-year lithium battery, which means that, you know, a couple days ago when you heard that PSA on the radio, it's time to change your clocks, it's also time to change the batteries in your alarm, we don't need to do that anymore. We simply need to install 10-year lithium battery alarms, and in about year 9 or 10, replace that alarm. The alarm also was designed to have what's known as a hush feature. So one of the reasons that people take down smoke alarms is because of what's known as nuisance alarms. It may be because of there's a bad cook in the home, from smoke from the kitchen or from steam from a shower. It activates the alarm. Residents in the home get bugged by that. They end up taking the alarm down or they take the battery out. This alarm had what's known as the hush feature that you would simply press this button and the alarm would deactivate, but then importantly turn back on automatically. So the community health worker talked about those issues. The other major intervention that we added to the fire department's existing home visiting program was the addition of a safety educator. The safety educator would follow behind the Baltimore City Fire Department and, with the residents' permission, complete an additional safety needs assessment, again, targeted by some of these constructs from the health belief model, and then have targeted messages related to that that were then reinforced by a brochure. Our ultimate behaviors that we were trying to influence related to fire safety and scald prevention. In terms of fire safety, it was to encourage families to have a working smoke alarm on every level of their home, particularly the 10-year lithium battery alarm, and to encourage them to not only have but to practice a fire escape plan. And then in terms of scald burn prevention, we wanted families to know the temperature of the hot water in their home, and if it was too high and they didn't know it, to have the skills and resources to be able to adjust the temperature setting on their water heater to bring it into compliance. This is an example of the safety needs assessment that our safety educator would go through. The intent is not for you to be able to read this, but really just to show that we had questions, and then based on the respondents' response, they would be either reinforced with the accurate information or given the correct information by the safety educator. It's a little bit easier to show here. So this is an example of our safety brochure. We pulled out the fire safety information here, and you can see through the red highlighted areas the constructs related to the health belief model that were reinforced. So susceptibility, severity, barriers, benefits, including social barriers to keeping your smoke alarms up and running. So we used Household Survey 2 responses to be able to evaluate the work. Let me go back here. So you can see that in our standard area, we were able to complete the Household Survey 2 with 341 participants, and we were able to conduct the Household Survey with 367 households in the enhanced area. And these areas differed in terms of the proportion of African Americans living in that area. They also differed by age and by the percentage of children less than 18 in the home. We used four items to assess fire safety knowledge and also constructed a total fire safety knowledge score. And for the sake of time, I'm displaying only the percent correct knowledge at follow-up in the first two columns. So for instance, in the standard community, 32% of participants answered correctly, compared to 42% of participants in the enhanced community, that cooking is the most common cause of fires. In the third column there, which is a test for differences in change, a change from baseline to follow-up measures within the standard and within the enhanced community, i.e., did the enhanced community change more than the standard community from baseline to follow-up? You can see that using an example of the second item here, when most fatal fires occur, that the standard area performed better than the enhanced community. And that's because, I'm not showing it here, but the standard community actually did worse at baseline on this answer, and they had more opportunity to improve relative to the enhanced community. Similarly, to evaluate SCALD safety knowledge, we have five items now, as well as a total SCALD safety knowledge score. And here, the enhanced area scored higher at follow-up on all five items, as well as on their overall SCALD score. In addition, the enhanced group's rate of change in their baseline to follow-up overall scores was statistically significantly better than the standard group. And then finally, through some regression analysis, controlling for age, education, poverty status, race, homeowner status, and the number of people in the home, we were able to document that the enhanced group's overall fire safety knowledge at follow-up and their SCALD safety knowledge scores at follow-up were statistically significantly better than the standard groups. So, in conclusion, while one could argue that the health belief model is not an emerging behavioral theory, I'm here today to present perhaps its newest trick, and that is its utility for injury prevention programs. It's our belief that the health belief model constructs were useful in guiding both our assessment items as well as the targeted messages used, and that having these individual constructs and the ability to assign them across a number of interventions was important to make sure that exposure to priority messages were reinforced throughout our intervention. Thank you.